Our reading today is from the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 2. Let us hear what God is saying to the church. In the time of King Herod, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem asking, "Where is the child who has been born King of the Jews? For we observed his star at its rising and have come to pay him homage." When King Herod heard this, he was frightened, and all Jerusalem with him. And calling together all the chief priests and scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Messiah was to be born. They told him, "In Bethlehem of Judea, for so it has been written by the prophet, 'And you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. For from you shall come a ruler who is to shepherd my people Israel.'" Then Herod secretly called for the wise men and learned from them the exact time when the star had appeared. Then he sent them to Bethlehem, saying, "Go and search diligently for the child. And when you have found him, bring me word so that I may also go and pay him homage." When they had heard the king, they set out. And there ahead of them went the star that they had seen at its rising, until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw that star had stopped, they were overwhelmed with joy. On entering the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother, and they knelt down and paid him homage. Then opening their treasure chests, they offered him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they left for their own country by another road. God's word is life. Thanks be to God.
Well, I thought we might have heard the fuller story from Matthew's gospel this morning. How it goes on to describe Herod going berserk when he discovers the Magi are not returning to inform him about the whereabouts of the Christ child. And how, in a rage, he unleashes this terrible violence. I thought we might have made room for all of that today. It's such a contemporary story. But then yesterday happened. Yesterday, right here, with the celebration of Joan Butterfield's life. Something happened yesterday that I think broke through to us, broke through in us, as we really touched into some of what matters most, that I think calls for our lingering with just a little while longer. So last evening I thought, you know, we don't need Herod come crashing into this space today. But rather, what would it be for us to allow ourselves to just be held in the energy that was here yesterday? Well, as a way of coming back into yesterday, there's this piece by Mary Ludi that I'd like to share, first of all, about the season of Epiphany. Because I think that's what happened yesterday. We had an epiphany. Here's what she writes. "Our planet has come full circle. Things should feel new, yet for many people the calendar is cleared only for business as usual. And the soul's season, like the weather outside here in the north, is winter. But the church has entered a different season, Epiphany, a season of signs. It starts with a star in the east and ends with a fire on the mountain. So what she's referencing here are the stories from Scripture that frame this season that stretches over 6 or 7 weeks. How the season of Epiphany begins with the story we have today of the Magi following the star, and concludes with the story of the Transfiguration, that mountaintop story, where the disciples witness Jesus transfigured, shining like the sun, and the voice from out of the cloud that urges, listen to him. Okay, so back to Mary. The church has entered a different season, Epiphany. A season of signs. It starts with a star in the east, ends with fire on a mountain. A season of voices. It starts with directions in a dream, ends with acknowledgement from a cloud. A season of unveilings. It starts with a glimpse of baby skin and ends with a display of gleaming garments. A season of worship. It starts with the homage of the Magi and ends with the prostration of the disciples. In the dead of winter, the church gives us God sightings, gives them as if to persuade us that our world only appears solid, still, dark, and cold, but is in fact stirring all the time, ardent, vivid, porous. As if to say that this stretch of predictability we call our daily life is really, as Barbara Brown Taylor puts it, a startling game of hide and seek with the divine. As if to say that heaven's flame burns hot here too, not just the other side of Peter's Gate. Starfire, dream clouds, baby's flesh, garments of light, Magi on their knees and disciples on their faces. Epiphany is the church's way of impressing upon us that discipleship is as much being spoken to as speaking, as much adoring as serving, as much perceiving as doing, as much finding as seeking. Seeking is never over. There's always more to find. But in Epiphany, the Spirit seems to desire for us a momentary end of seeking. She brings us to an encounter with the immense and saving beauty that burns in Jesus, the bright beauty destined for us all. She lights the lamp and leads us. Come closer, she says. You're getting warm. Now, over here, a little more. Yes, yes. Now do you see? And if we are attentive, we do perceive it. We fall on our knees. So yesterday, I think, had this experience of coming closer, of seeing. I've seen that bright beauty that burns in Jesus, destined for us all. It was through the words that Daniel shared that I think we caught a glimpse of it. And so last night I asked Daniel, would he just bring that to us again today? And thank you, Daniel, for your yes.
From the moment I began my work here at James Bay United, almost 8 years ago now, I found a deep and impacting friendship in Joan and Lyman Butterfield. They both embraced me with such wide open arms and hearts from the very beginning that it's actually hard for me to recall having first met Joan and Lyman, and I've been trying these days to remember that first meeting, but somehow we've always been friends. That easy familiarity that comes with family and longtime friends. Joan and Lyman. Lyman and Joan. A duo if there ever was one. And it's so hard for me to reconcile this separation. Nearly every single Sunday morning since I've been music director here, Joan and Lyman were among the very first to arrive. Ubiquitous features right there in the front pew, so close to me right there at the piano. And every week being greeted by this warm and deep and overflowing affection. No conditions, no questions, just a pure outpoured love. And that is a rare, rare thing to receive in this world. And that's one of the things about Joan that just amazed me. Her incredible capacity to give such true affection and such true love so freely. Not just giving it away like it didn't matter, and just the opposite. She had this way of every Sunday morning, arms usually up, her hands in my hands, and looking at me and saying, "I love you. I'm very fond of you. Lyman and I think very highly of you. We appreciate everything that you've done for us." And every time I felt like the fullness of my personhood had been seen and lifted up and affirmed. Every time, like receiving a blessing. Joan was also like a grandmother to me in the no BS way that she had of expressing her care and concern for me. "You move so fast. You need to slow down. You look tired. You should rest." Another thing that just amazed me about Joan was the fierceness with which she loved Lyman. She always, always had Lyman's back. Lyman and I get together a few times a year to sing together and for him to prepare something to sing here on a Sunday morning. And like most people my age who work full time and have a young family, it's hard to stop, hard to make time. And I have a very, very bad habit of putting off getting together with Lyman. Always an excuse. After the holidays. Once the new term settles down. Once I've submitted final marks. And Lyman, who is always so gracious and never complains, but Joan, her love for Lyman would not abide seeing him run around. She would stop me on a Sunday or call me midweek. "When are you and Lyman getting together? He wants to know. I want to know." She would remind me, "This is important." I can't imagine this place, this room, without Joan. Her absence is so big. And the world is less with her not in it. I learned so much from Joan. From her way of being in the world. Don't hold back your love for others. Why be stingy in expressing your love and affection for others when you can choose to let it overflow? Why wave when you can embrace? Why say hello when you can say, "I love you"? Why say, "How are you?" when you can say, "I appreciate you"? Why not choose to let those you love know it? Over and over and over again. Because we all need that, to be told over and over and over again that we are seen and loved and appreciated. And that's what Joan did. And that is an amazing and an inspiring thing.
So much of what I hear Daniel say, and you've captured it there too, Lyman, is that Joan showed us another way. This way of affirming our value simply because we are, because we breathe. Joan showed us another way home to each other.
You might say, Karen, it affirms our faith.
That too. It's not uncommon, and it certainly was part of our conversations at the reception after the service yesterday, how people are just reflecting with each other, how we discover so much more about a person at a memorial service when we no longer have the opportunity to deepen that relationship. So, why do we wait? That's what we often come away asking ourselves. Why would we wait to come to know and care about each other more deeply when it's too late? Why would we miss the opportunity that we have now to receive from and to offer each other the gift of ourselves? So just imagine for a moment a perfect stranger who walks in among us and what it would be to sense that kind of open-hearted care and regarding of one another. What would it be for us, for the benefit of our own dear lives, to be intentional about cultivating that kind of spirit even more among us? Those of us who had the experience of those one-to-one conversations on those Wednesday evenings during Advent, without exception, we found ourselves deeply blessed. So much so that we will be creating some other opportunities for that again. For some time now, you might have noticed in the printed announcement page this invitation to belong to a small group, a deeper dive, I called it. The opportunity to meet maybe monthly with a small group to reflect on our lives, on our faith together. There are so many ways that we could pursue to deepen our connection, our care for each other. And so I wonder, what might that look like for you as we move into this new year? If we really heard this call to return home by another way. Return home to each other by another way. I'm suggesting we just take a little bit of time in silence now to just let what has happened for us this morning just kind of move in us.